Spent a week in a dusty library, waiting for some words to jump in me. We met by a trick of fate, French Navy, my sailor maid.
Hello and welcome to In the Mood for Podcast, with me, Carl from ultimateaddict.com and Pete from inthemoodforblog.blog.co.uk. Okay, so this is new for us.
It's very new for us, very lo-fi, very new.
Yeah, I mean, this could end up being terrible, but we're going to give it a go.
Yes, we are.
Cool. We're going to talk about some news, some talking points from the last few weeks, because this is the first podcast, so we've got all of the early summer stuff to talk about.
There are no rules.
Yep. No holds barred. And then we're going to talk about Prometheus, where there'll definitely be no holds barred.
Yes.
And stuff we've watched lately. That's pretty much the gist of the podcast. So we don't know how long it's going to last. This could, like, be going on.
We might break the internet by doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be bad. Okay. So, let's start by talking about the trailer for Tom Hooper.
I only realised it was Tom Hooper when it actually said it. Beforehand, I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's just how out of the loop I am.
It's not the natural... Like, it's not...
Not the fit.
...what you would expect, is it?
So, obviously, this is a film that anyone who's a fanboy of The Social Network is obviously going to want to hate as much as they can.
Including me.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. Well, seeing as I didn't particularly like The Social Network, I'm not actually that bothered, so...
Yeah.
But,
you're weird.
King's speech for the win.
But, I don't know. My family loves Les Miserables, but I went to see it, and there's so much plot in it. Everybody's got a death scene, and it's it's all too much. I like the music, but it's really overwrought. And this trailer, the trailer's okay.
It's not really going to be anything that's going to say to you, this isn't going to be overall. It's something that might actually play up to all these sort of negative things you might actually be thinking about it.
Definitely, yeah.
I just want to know why he has to cast every single... I thought it was French. Why is he casting Australian guys? I was saying to you earlier, I mean, it's just Russell Crowe, the guy can't even speak properly. What on earth are you going to try and have him sing? I mean, is this going to be a Johnny Depp?
Sweeney Todd? Is he not?
Doesn't the band's good. Keanu Reeves had a band.
So... The trailer, it's got... There's a bit of a Joan of Arc vibe about Anne Hathaway in this.
The other thing I was thinking, which is completely got nothing to do with the actual story, it's just from the look of it, I got Memoirs of a Geisha vibe.
Right.
In that whole sumptuous production, but I don't actually know if there's actually going to be anything there.
Yeah, it looks... They look like they're focusing a lot on the war, which is probably the weakest part of the story, because there's so much going on, like, about the characters' personal lives, and then the war's kind of like a backdrop to everything and an excuse for lots of people to die, basically.
Yeah. Also, the other thing with... It is a teaser. At the end of the day, it is a teaser. Mm. So it's not as if it's going to be... They might have just chosen this one little bit to actually just try and for the one song to just try and sell it.
Yeah, I mean, I think using that song to cover it was good.
Yeah, it's effective. Probably most famous one.
Yeah,
and
she seems to sing it well.
If you are going to pick a song to actually put over the trailer, you want the main person singing.
Yeah.
So, it's in that respect, it's probably the right choice. But whether it the film's the right choice, and the director's the right choice, and the people are the right choice. That's the other issue.
Yeah, I mean, I found the King's Speech quite bland visually. So
well, this is the this is the thing. I remember I was having a conversation online with somebody, and we were talking about Hooper in terms of like auteur theory, and I didn't really pick up anything just from not because I saw John Adams when it was on TV. I saw the Damned United when it was at the cinema. I saw Elizabeth years ago, and so it wasn't as if I'd watched these within a close period of time, so it wasn't with me actually thinking about it, but I actually didn't pick up on any sort of this is his visual style. But apparently people like tend to like focus in on like the fisheye lenses and
really
apparently that's one of his things. So that was one of the sort of like things about the King's Speech I didn't like, that certain things did actually stick out visually, and you're thinking, well, just shut up and let Colin stutter and get back to the point of it all.
Yeah, but, I mean, a lot of that film's about the acting mainly. I mean, he didn't really. I know he won the Oscar, but he didn't really do a tremendous.
Well, he wasn't a visual stylist.
Yeah.
Also, the other thing with the other side of that is he's clearly an actor's director, because John Adams is all about the acting, and Elizabeth was all about the acting, and Damned United is all about Sheen. It's not about the football. It's not about any sort of like really like snappy editing about trying to show that Leeds weren't a bunch of complete thugs. And it's the same with the King's Speech. It's as long as he gets the acting right, which is why Les Mis is interesting, because it's about the singing. I mean, I know
it's about the singing. I mean, I was watching a documentary about it, and when it first came out, it didn't get good reviews at all.
Mm.
So, which I can understand, because it is so saturated with plot, but the music's undeniably really good.
Well, it's got tunes. Yeah. And it's got tunes, so that's really all you need.
Yeah.
But obviously for a film, you need a bit more. And this is what I was going to say just then. I suppose it's the staging, that's the important thing. And with him, it's more about winding the actors up and letting them go. So I'd be much... Going back to the geisha thing, I'd be much more comfortable if this was someone like Rob Marshall.
Right, yeah.
Because you know that boy can stage it. Because that's what he does.
Yeah. I wonder if this is going to be more kind of Australia, but a musical.
Oh, like in terms of tone, you mean? Like all over the shop, but just hope that the main people carry it through.
Yeah. I think people are definitely going to like it. I mean, it's already got an advantage from being such a successful stage musical. So
also the Jackman dynamic is really interesting, because this is a Tony winning song and dance man.
Yeah.
So you're not, so from that perspective, I mean, you're not going to get, there are a few guys around who can A, sell a movie, and B, have the pedigree within this genre to do it. So that's the one thing I'm particularly really interested in, is Jackman, because he's got a rep.
With the casting, they've definitely gone for, I mean, I know you're not the biggest Russell Crowe fan in terms of
they've gone for the stars. Yeah. They've gone for the stars, but it also depends on the role. If they're seeing something in him that they think's gonna bring something different to it, then why not? I mean, I didn't mind Depp in Sweeney Todd, and he couldn't sing, so depends if he suits the character or not.
I don't think anybody in Sweeney Todd could sing, could they?
Oh, no. I think that was the challenge, to make a musical where no one could sing.
Yeah, I think Tim Burton likes a challenge.
Well, maybe his next challenge would be casting a film with somebody that he's not actually sleeping with.
Does that include Johnny Depp?
well, let's not go there. Maybe that's why the alleged problems with parody came about, but... We might have some more on her later, depending.
Maybe
if
we should just talk about that now.
Oh, Cafe, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, Cafe de Flore. That was one of the films I saw recently, and it's currently this week out at the Midlands Arts Centre in Birmingham.
Right. Okay.
And it's the director. What's his name? Jean-Marc Vallée.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. I get confused with these French Canadian first names. They're all double barreled, and it's either Marc Jean or Jean Pierre or whatever. I think it's Jean Marc Vallée. Yeah, crazy. You really liked that one, didn't you?
I didn't really like it, but I thought it was good.
Mm.
It was
great soundtrack.
A bit cutesy, you know.
Mm.
A little bit. It was okay, but
super soundtrack.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Definitely.
And that's
can't be Patsy Cline.
Yeah, that's kind of what he's going for here, actually. With there's a lot of the main character in it's in two sections. The one section is in 60s Paris, which is parody, and her son who's got Down syndrome, and then the other half is set in modern day Montreal, and the guy's a superstar DJ. So obviously, because he's a DJ, you've got a lot of sort of like cool music in the background. So it is very much about the sort of look and atmospheric feel of it all. It's just it's this the thing. I mean, Johnny Depp has shacked up with Vanessa Paradis and stalled one of the most promising careers going in European cinema, because she's brilliant, but she didn't work.
Well, she's very good in The Girl on the Bridge.
Oh, I love that film. Oh, I adore that.
Yeah.
Daniel O'Toole, The Man is King. The Man is King.
But I just remember the daggers. What's
the
that?
Daggers is a love scene. That's just
awesome,
awesome. But in this, yeah, she does give one of the better performances from last year, and very natural, a little bit of de-glamming, because obviously you don't want to look like a catwalk model when you're supposed to be a woman in pop, mother in the 60s Paris, but no, she does it very well. And the lad, Mark Kermode, was talking about this, how remarkable the child with Down syndrome was. He's right.
I mean,
the lad's really affecting. But the trouble is that storyline's really good, and then the modern storyline with the DJ and the love of his life, who he's left for this new gorgeous blonde woman who just tussles her hair every 5 seconds. It's not as interesting. But
you find it a bit dull.
It's one of these ones that's interesting up to a point, and that point being where they don't actually go anywhere with it. And then once you're realising they're not actually going anywhere with it, and the big reveal comes up, and it just falls completely flat. So
right, yeah.
Once it gets to that
point, it hasn't earned it.
Yeah, once it gets to the end, it's a little bit. It's either something that you're going to take on face value and go, "Oh, okay," or you're going to think, "Ah, that was awful," and then it's just unconvincing. Let's just put it that way.
Right.
Any words beginning with un. That's what describes the film.
But on the positive side, she's very good.
On the positive side, right? She's very good. Great soundtrack. Jerky editing, but that's kind of actually a good thing, because it sort of like keeps you on edge as to what's actually happening. It sort of like gives little snippets from both timelines at once when it's sort of jerking in and out of one into the other. So that's quite an interesting little technique that he's got there. I mean, it might not be the most smoothest, but it's interesting. But it just depends on whether you actually buy where they're going with it. So there's definitely a lot on offer, and especially if you like her, it's definitely worth a look. But ultimately, I was rather underwhelmed.
Did you pay to see this as well?
This was on the card. This was on the card at Cineworld. So technically yes, but really no.
Your Cineworld is showing Café de Flore.
Yes, it showed Café de Flore for a week.
Lucky you.
I know. It leaked online months ago, and I didn't watch it. It came on in Cineworld, so that's actually really good, and I'm really pleased that it came on Cineworld, that films like this actually do get distribution and people are able to go and see them at the cinema, as it should be. There we go. Turn that one around quite nicely.
and people are actually going to see this, despite the fact that everybody else is going to see the Avengers.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. No less than any other art house film. I think when I went to see it, I usually go on a matinee, and there's probably about 20 people in there, and that's more than were there for The New World when I saw that, and it's more than were there for The White Ribbon when I went to see that. So I think it's just getting a normal sort of level of interest that most well-regarded foreign language films actually get.
I mean, you're not going to convince, you know, 90% of people are not going to be convinced to see that film.
Well, of course
not. So it's all about...
It depends. You've got to have a reason to see it.
Yeah.
And this is the thing with world cinema in general. I'm guilty of this to a degree. I always say with Bollywood films that I don't know enough about it, and I don't want to go in there blind and end up watching the Indian version of Just Like Heaven.
Exactly.
So I don't bother. But
although Just Like Heaven is okay.
Well, I've never seen it. It's just an example.
Yeah.
And I know you like Reese, so I knew you wouldn't.
Yeah.
Have seen
don't be
slagging
me. Don't
be disparaging.
Yourself.
Yeah. It's like that. So if you've seen any film with Vanessa Paradis and you liked her in it, and there's a few where she's good, Heartbreaker, well, that's not her best performance, but it's a good film. Or if you've seen Elisa, that's one from the 90s, that's a back in the day type film. Or any of them, then you might want to go and see it. Or if you've seen pictures of her on the red carpet and thought, "Ooh, who's that?" and then you suddenly see, "Oh, there's a Vanessa Paradis film, I might go and check that out." Yeah, you've got to have a reason to do it. And I suppose the other one is the director, and I suppose the thing he's most famous for here is The Young Victoria.
Which
didn't do that well in America, but did very well here. But then again, it would do, because it's about the royalty.
I don't think Emily Blunt has been less captivating than anything else, really.
But the man has to be commended, because Rupert Friend was really nice in that
film.
He
was really decent, wasn't he? I thought he was better than her.
Yeah, I do as well. And I've never liked him in anything. And to the point that I was almost getting into Orlando Bloom syndrome with him, where I was just going or Sam Worthington, where I was just going to completely ignore anything he ever did. But he was lovely in that film. And
he really was, yeah.
So, if nothing else, that proves that Valet's got talent. He got a good performance out of Rupert Friend.
But this one was a misfire.
An intriguing misfire.
Okay.
Yeah. So what else have we got then?
We could talk about Vanessa's husband.
Vanessa's husband.
Are they married?
I don't know.
Her and Johnny, I think they're married.
Yeah. I actually think she's just the mother of his children. Yeah, but you just want to get onto this so we can have a massive argument.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, what Cal is referring to is Dark Shadows.
Yeah.
Actually, when he said Vanessa, I went blank for a second then, because I thought he was talking about Vanessa Redgrave, and I was thinking, I thought he was dead. Tony Richardson, isn't he dead? Have you been watching some like kitchen sink films? Anyway, Dark Shadows, which was out, how long ago was that out? 2 or 3 weeks ago? At cinemas, but unlike Café de Flore, this had no problem getting into multiplex cinemas.
Exactly, yes, because Tim Burton's obviously got a big fan base.
He does, and
still,
yes, there's apparently nothing the man does to dissuade people from liking his films will actually achieve that. So actually, we both agreed to put up IMDb, so I'm just going to type in Burton into IMDb here, Tim Burton, because I want to have a look at his filmography, and I don't know it off by heart.
What do you want to see? The last good film he directed?
I just want to see the sort of films he's been doing before this. If you actually look, I'm going to scroll down. Please don't go producer first. Why does IMDb go to producer first? Okay, this decade since Planet of the Apes, the man's done Big Fish, which I really liked.
I liked it too.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which was
was not very good.
Corpse Bride, I really liked that.
I liked that too.
Sweeney Todd, I thought was that quite good.
Mm.
Alice in Wonderland, Everyone Hates, I thought it was okay, with about 17 Y's on the end of that okay.
Okay.
And then Dark Shadows. So he's kind of going, well, it's Sweeney Todd. That's really dark. That's a really dark film. It's not exactly something, I mean, based on a musical, but popular musical.
They're all kind of dark, except for Big Fish, which is kind of an anomaly, really. I mean, I know it's a little kind of quirky, but it's not his kind of quirk when you compare it to the rest.
That's a John August film. he's written some awful films, but he also wrote Go. Sarah Polley.
That was good.
Which was a very sort of Tarantino influenced type of film.
Yeah.
You used to find a lot back in the 90s. But yeah, Dark Shadows, shall I do a rundown on it? On the actual plot?
Go for it, yeah.
because I actually liked it. Yeah, briefly. Basic plot is that Johnny Depp was a aristocrat in the late 18th century in America. He annoys a servant who's played by the voluptuous Eva Green, who turns very out to voluptuous. Be a witch. When he spurns her advances, she curses him, turns him into a vampire. Don't ask why, because the film doesn't answer it. Buries him in a coffin for 200 years, and then he's awakened inadvertently in the 70s. And by, so
what, by some oil drill or something, I can't even remember.
It's something,
somebody's drilling. Or something.
Someone's digging for something, and it wasn't. Tim Burton digging for a plot, apparently. So then he comes. He's back. He's awake. He's still a vampire. He's in the 70s, and he's trying. He wants to put his family business back on track because Eva Green, for some reason, is still alive 200 years later. That's never addressed either, so don't bother asking.
Yeah, in it, running some kind of trawling business, which is very
odd. With fish. It's very fishy. And she's taken over the local. Is it Maine or New Hampshire or somewhere up in the north?
Yeah, around there.
And so she's taken over the local and basically reduced his family's former fishing genius to very little indeed. Okay, so I think we've already hinted at some of the flaws.
Yeah, this is pretty obvious. Perhaps.
I mean, do you want to run down the slating of the what's actually wrong with this film?
Well, first of all, it's from a TV show from the late 60s.
Soap opera, apparently.
Was it a soap opera?
I think it was a daily soap type thing.
It was probably more interesting than this, but it was just odd. I mean, I don't see any reason for this film to exist now. I feel like it would only have been a good idea in like 1972 when the show just ended. Because combining vampires in the 1970s just seems a bit dated.
I find it interesting that part of the trivia on this is that Michelle Pfeiffer actually rang up Burton and asked for a part in the film.
Really?
So obviously this is some sort of like cult American thing which we don't really get.
I think
English.
That's a bit desperate because she's kind of bad in this. And I really like her. I really, really like her, but she's not very good in this film.
When was the last time she was good? Stardust. He says, thinking out loud. She's only done three films since, actually. Sherry, Effects, and New Year's Eve. I haven't seen any of the latter. She was decent in Sherry.
She's not exactly picking them, is she?
No. Remake of Hairspray.
Oh, she was really good in Hairspray.
She's not done much since White Oleander, which she was doing about a film a year up until then, and then sort of... Well, you get to a certain age, and...
I think she actively kind of retreated from acting, I think. I can't imagine why anybody wouldn't want to cast her, because...
She must have made enough money over a career to be able to do that if she wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not going to be... You can't really envision the woman being starving for bread.
And she looks amazing. She's like 52 or something. She looks incredible.
Helena Bonham Carter looked good in this film as well.
Yeah.
With the
she
red
was,
wig.
She was one of the plus points, along with Eva Green.
Eva Green stole the show for me. I started to really like her years ago with the Bond thing and On the Back of the Dreamers and Kingdom of Heaven.
Yeah,
I wasn't really that fussed. But the last couple of years, did you end up seeing Perfect Sense in the end? I don't think you
did. I didn't, no.
No, Perfect. She did two films last year, well, that came out last year, but and I say came out, I really mean got shown on like one screen in London and then died. So it didn't really come out.
Stuff like
Womb,
Cracks.
Womb was one. Cracks actually made my Cineworld.
Oh, did it?
For a week. That was by Ridley Scott's daughter, Jordan. That was decent, but not great. You had Perfect Sense with Ewan McGregor, which is one of those ones that sort of really gets under your skin and makes you think about it, even if it's not brilliant. But
you really liked it, didn't you?
It's one of these ones where when you're watching it, it's a little bit weird and the tone's all over the shop, so you don't actually like it while you're watching it. But then when you think about it, It really does grow on you. So it's probably one of these films that's grown by about a star in my ratings just by the passage of time. And the other one was Womb, which is with Doctor Who. Matt Smith.
Yeah, that does.
That's a really weird
film.
That
does seem interesting. I'd like to see that.
Apparently the director. This is why I like Eva Green as a person. She did that film. The guy sent her the script for Womb. And it's about a woman who, it's in the future where you can give birth to clones. And so you can basically, essentially, give birth to loved ones who you've lost. So you can give birth to your mother. You could give birth to a husband or that's whatever, creepy. Provided you have the consent. So that's the basic premise of the film. And the guy sent her the script. And she and is some random Hungarian guy who nobody's ever heard of. Right. And she sent a reply back saying, "Can I see some of your films?" He sent her something which is essentially, apparently, something that would be shown in art galleries. It's just a feature length. It's like what's that, Koichi Scani or whatever it's called? You know, the one with all the Phil Glass music from the '80s. It's one of these art projects basically, where it's all the visuals. And so she saw that, and she's seen the script. He sends her the film, she likes the film, and she agrees to do it. Just based on that. Doesn't care what the budget is.
Yeah.
Probably got paid nothing for doing it, which is probably why
very
she's
little.
Doing...
Yeah.
Which is probably why she's doing Dark Shadows.
Yeah, true,
afterwards.
Yeah.
And you've got to like that in an actress. If you're just doing something because you like it, you like the style of the director and you like the script.
That's, exactly. I mean, that's I think that's what actresses should be doing generally. Trying
Kate
to do more interesting...
The Kate Winslet route. So you do Titanic, you make your name, and then you go off and do Hideous Kinky and Holy Smoke and all those random films.
Yeah, it makes like I love Reese Witherspoon, but it makes me sad that she just doesn't get that. It seems I know she's doing Mud with Jeff Nichols, but I don't
too many.
Really understands, does she?
There's too many how do you knows on the resume.
Oh, but what? That was so good.
No, it's actually been on TV this week. That's why it's the only reason I said that is because it's on my mind, because it's been on TV.
But that
and
was
Paul,
that
Paul
was
Rudd's good in that.
That was an interesting move in terms of the fact that it was James Brooks.
Yeah.
But stuff like, I don't know, stuff she'd done before, just like Heaven, like you mentioned.
Yeah, I suppose when she's trying to do it, when she's trying to go serious, she's trying to go serious Oscar bait, like your renditions of This World,
yeah,
that sort of thing. She doesn't try and go serious and try and do like Eva Green, just something that nobody's ever heard of, or even like when Phil Hoffman, because Phil Hoffman won the Oscar the same year that she did.
Yes.
She won it for Walk the Line, he won it for Capote. Yeah. And the first project that he actually, because obviously once you win an Oscar you can green light whatever you want, and
right.
He used winning the Oscar to green light Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, and that's a film that literally would not have got off the ground if it wasn't for him. And you think, well, that's crazy because it's Sidney Lumet, but Sidney Lumet, it's not enough anymore sadly to actually be a legendary director who wants to make a film.
He's died since, hasn't he? Has he died?
Yeah, I think he did. He die before those Oscars?
I don't
remember. There was talk about him getting a nomination, but I think that was more wishful thinking rather than anything else at the time.
Yeah, it was all right. I quite liked it.
Well, I've got a man crush on Ethan Hawke ever since Before Sunrise. I think I'm going to like anything the man does.
Yeah.
Although that isn't going to persuade me to watch Woman in the Fifth, which I've heard very bad things about.
I have too.
Right. Should we have a moving on? Oh no, we haven't finished Dark Shadows. That was a big digression.
Oh. See, you quite like this, right?
I do. And I probably like it for the reasons that you dislike it, because it is all over the shop.
Yeah.
It doesn't really make sense. But the reason I liked it is very simply, it made me laugh pretty consistently the whole way through. I found it really quite entertaining. I did like the 70s-ness of it, even though a lot of it was spoiled in the trailer. Well, some of the better lines were spoiled in the trailer. The sex fight was very, very amusing. Eva Green, as you said, was easily the best thing about it. She really came to play.
Yeah, I think she just decided to just go for it.
Just steal it. Because if Depp wasn't going to be doing that much, then you may as well.
Yeah.
And she does. She is clearly quite mad.
But it's all a bit of a mess, isn't it? I mean, I don't understand why.
Yeah, it's not well written. There are plot points that are brought up after the fact, which is a pet peeve of mine. Yeah. And so, if I was technically like analysing this for like an essay on the screenwriting merits, then you could pull it apart if you wanted to, very easily. And I suppose it just really depends if you're going with the vibe or if you're not. And they've got to, in some respects, you can't just say, oh, you got to switch your brain off and go along with it, because they do have to earn it. And so, for me, they earned it because they made me laugh quite a bit in the first opening act, and so I just carried on laughing the whole way through. Whereas if you don't, and you're not immediately there, then I can see why people don't like this, because it's very messy. There are a lot of problems with plot and the characterization, and there's just stuff that isn't explained. There's just so much stuff that isn't explained. Not that you need to be treated like a child and spoon-fed as if you're watching a Christopher Nolan film, but there are some things that if you're going to be fantastical about things, like Eva Green, I mean, she's a witch. Okay, fine, she's a witch. That doesn't necessarily mean, by definition, the woman's immortal.
That's true. Which, I don't think, a witch is immortal. I don't think they are, really.
Well, they can be burnt at the stake, so clearly not.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So, it's one of these, it's just really, I can see why people would be really puzzled by this.
I mean, it starts with a girl going for a job at this house, and it completely abandons the girl, I mean, and then decides about 70 minutes in that she needs a backstory flashback.
Yeah, it's one of those. Yeah, it's the screenplay is really not good. Really not good. And I suppose that's the thing. Apparently with the TV series, I did a little bit of reading on this. Wikipedia! Apparently the vampire character that Depp plays didn't actually come into the original Dark Shadows TV show until about 6 months into the run.
So what were you doing before that then?
I've no idea.
Okay.
Maybe it was just some sort of 60s dilapidated version of Sunset Beach without the bikinis. Yes.
Well, this is trashy too, so.
It is. I mean, there's lots. I was very surprised it was 12. Because there's lots of sex references and jokes and scenes, and there wasn't any swearing, but there's a bit of violence, and I would not want an 11-year-old, even if you're going with your parent, I wouldn't want to be a parent taking an 11-year-old to see that and then thinking, oh,
yeah,
once you actually get in there. But that's just me being old now.
Is Chloe Moretz officially a woman now?
Well, Johnny Depp called her a hooker in the film.
Or is she not very hookerish in this?
She doesn't look like a hooker at all.
No.
She's not Jodie Foster. She doesn't have that sort of obvious underage sexuality to her. She hasn't got the jailbait look.
As if they've given her the role but said she's too young to, like, show any flesh or anything, because she doesn't.
I know, it's one of those ones where they probably just thought, who's a famous young actress? There's two.
Yeah, one's Elfa. Got a certain,
yeah. Elfa, oh, three, Abigail Breslin as well, but they wouldn't have her in this. And then, yeah, so they want names on the poster. And that's depressing in and of itself.
It is.
Yeah, the other thing at that cinema this week is Monsieur Lejar, which I haven't seen.
Right.
All in Good Time, which is it's about. Have you seen the trailers for All in Good Time at the cinema recently? It's about an Indian Aladdin girl who I think it might be an arranged marriage, and then the dad's a nightmare. Writers of East of East looks. Not as good as East is East. Yeah, that sort of thing. The other one is Goodbye First Love, which I'm going to destroy probably in about in under a minute, hopefully.
Got on the time, haven't you?
Yeah, okay. This is by the woman Mia Hansen-Love, who wrote The Father of My Children, which I thought was the most pretentious thing I've seen in many a year. This one, it's kind of like Crazy, and it's just got the two people, young people, who are just completely vapid, that you don't give a single... You don't care at all anything that happens to them. It's just these two people. It's an exercise... It's just an exercise in how not to create drama, because they create characters which you don't actually don't have any, they're not rounded at all, you don't actually care about them, and then when they actually push them in directions that actually aren't interesting, so when you've got characters you don't care about pushed into situations that aren't interesting, then it's just a chore. Really is. And it's one of these ones that it gets shown at a festival because there's some nice cinematography and that's it.
So there was nice cinematography, and that
probably, probably.
If probably. You were too busy,
if I was too busy, I don't understand why the French just have to have nudity in everything. What was that Luc Besson film? That Luc Besson film last year, Adventures of Adèle Blanc-Sec. She gets naked in that. This is family. That's the equivalent of Night at the Museum, and the girl's getting naked.
Is that Sophie Marceau or
something? No, Louise Bourgeon. She was in The Girl from Monaco, which actually is a very good film. It stars Rushdie Gem, who's in all those movies with Sammy Bourgeois, like Days of Glory, and the one that got Oscar nominated, Outside the Law. And it's about a bodyguard and a trophy wife. Trophy wife? No, she's a weather girl. Weather girl who's after some bloke. It's funny. That's a good film. This one just awful.
Really?
Could not. So Wendy Eyde gave it a really good write up in the Times. I think it was Wendy Eyde, like 4 or 5 stars, something ridiculous. And I suppose maybe there might be some sort of like feminist thing where this was the first guy you were ever with, and you never really lose that or what have you.
Right.
And it doesn't matter how many guys that you end up sleeping with, you're never going to actually get around that. I mean, okay, fine, but I mean, reverse the situation, you're just going to come off like a dirty young man.
It's a little romantic, isn't it? I think it's...
Well, it's romantic without the romance, because it's like Before Sunset, you actually see the evolution of the relationship over a period of time, whereas with this, it's just bang, straight away. They're in bed having sex with each other, then bang, they're separated, then bang, it's 8 years later and she's shacked up with a 50-year-old and he's back on the scene.
This sounds bad.
Sounds like
bad screenwriting to me.
It's nothing I could recommend to anybody.
Right.
But this is the interesting thing. Next week at the Midland Arts Centre, the Binoche. L. Also, Mozart's Sister, which I'm mildly interested in seeing, and The Raid, but L is the one that I'm definitely going to be shelling out le cash for.
Because of Juliet.
That's the only reason. And I don't even know what the film's about. I'm going to see it purely because of her.
I need to see the Raid, which looks good.
I'll probably see that at the Cineworld at some point. Speaking of Cineworld, you haven't seen Snow White yet, have you?
I haven't. I did see Charlize Theron on the Graham Norton Show talking about it.
Was she talking about Prometheus as well?
Yeah, she's having a busy week, bless her. But
that's a junket and a half, that is.
Isn't it?
Two major blockbusters to promote. I mean, she is by far the one name, really big name in Prometheus.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nobody else.
And Snow White, really. I mean, is she digging in the Kristen Stewart now? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, if you're over 25 years old and...
And
male, yes.
But she's really nice. Like, she's comes across really well in interviews.
I was going to say, it's because she's not American, even though she sounds it.
Yeah.
So, no offence to any Americans listening.
No, but she does, she basically may as well be American.
Yeah.
She comes across like that, so, but...
So, the other things out this week, Lighthouse in Wolverhampton, Prometheus in How I Spent My Summer Vacation. I've got zero interest in the Mel Gibson.
I've seen that.
How is that, actually?
It's not very good.
Ah.
But it's
but,
kind
oh,
of...
But.
It's almost so bad it's good.
Ah.
Kind of thing. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous, the plot, but he is...
What is the plot? That he finds himself in some sort of Mexican prison?
Yeah, he's in a Mexican prison, but it's kind of like a holiday camp. I mean, imagine like Stalag 17, but kind of in Mexico.
Meets Porky's.
And there's these families living in this Mexican prison, and he befriends this kid, and he's got like a mother without a father, etc. And it's all about him trying to break out of the prison.
Right.
But I mean,
no Jewish people in sight, thankfully for Mel. topical.
Yeah, I mean,
shouldn't have gone.
That's
there.
Probably actually done his career a lot of good, because now he just doesn't seem to care. So he's just picking these projects after The Beaver, which I thought
what
he was really good.
What did you think of The
in.
Beaver?
Yeah, it was okay.
He was interesting in The Beaver.
Yeah,
I think I probably preferred Foster, but then I always do. But I wasn't a major fan of the film as a whole, but I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, this is exactly the same. This is interesting.
And Mel Gibson hasn't done interesting for a very long time.
Yeah, he certainly hasn't directed interesting
ever. Well, the history in Braveheart was certainly interesting.
Mm. Yeah. At least he's ditched his obsession with gore for now.
Oh, right. Well, Kermode was saying that this is like a return to his sort of Mad Max sort of like exploitation type DNA.
It is quite like that, yeah. It's very B-movie.
Mm.
But, I mean, I can see it working for some people, but it is just too much of it is ridiculous to accept.
Right. So. Strains suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
Right, so what else is this week? Whack, Café de Flore, we talked about that. Damsels in Distress, you've seen this one, I haven't.
Yeah,
so
this is my favourite film of 2012.
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun. Stop the clock. It's sort of like a comedy about kind of bourgeois, kind of condescending women. Studying
the female versions of me.
Yeah, it's kind of like Mean Girls, but like the bourgeois Mean Girls. Like right. instead of caring about Backstreet Boys, they care about Mozart kind of thing. But but it's really funny. I mean, it's got such a dry humour about it, and it works really well.
Who's in the cast? It's woman
Greta
Greenberg.
Greta Gerwig, who is mm-hmm. great. Annalee Tipton or something plays the other lead.
Oh, yes, she was the babysitter in Crazy Stupid Love. He says without looking that up on IMDb.
Oh, is that the one that
I'm
gets together
sure
with?
Yeah, she's obsessed by Steve Carell in Crazy Stupid Love.
Oh,
I
wow.
think. I'm pretty sure. I'll just double check that
yeah.
one. But
I didn't realise that.
I doubt I'm wrong on that one. Yes, actress Crazy Stupid Love. Go me.
Wow. Well done.
Anyway, do continue.
But yeah.
So it's her, Gerwig, and...
I don't know who else is in it.
Yeah, right.
But it's very good. So definitely check that out if it's coming to the Midlands Arts Centre.
Warwick Arts Centre, this one, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of art centres in the Midlands.
There's too many.
Yeah. Yeah, and then at the Electric, we have Prometheus, which we'll get onto shortly, I would have thought, and something which I will never see in my life, which is Moonrise Kingdom.
Wow. That's a bold statement.
It is a bold statement, but when the trailers have you wanting to go out and commit hate crimes against hipsters, I mean, this thing really made me angry. And that was just 2 minutes of trailer, so I physically cannot watch any Wes Anderson film
bad.
Ever again. I'm sure
it's
it isn't, but
bad.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure you think
baby
it is.
Baby steps.
Yeah. Okay, how's Ed Norton? That's the first question I'm going to ask.
He's fine. He's not in it a lot, but he's good. The kids are really good. I mean, I'm not a huge Wes Anderson fan, apart from The Royal Tenenbaums, which I really loved. But everything else is all a bit kind of so what.
Does it have as many French New Wave influences as the trailer would suggest?
Mm.
I mean, it looks really, really French from the trailer.
I don't know. I mean,
or is it just Anderson just masturbating his way through? Yeah, okay, it is Anderson masturbating his way through his
The art direction's amazing. As it is with most of his stuff.
He's an acquired taste, and this is the thing. If you're down with his type of humour, then you're gonna love everything the guy does.
This is like the quintessential Wes Anderson film. So if you don't like Wes Anderson,
avoid.
This is it. Yeah, you're not gonna be swayed by this.
So. No, I got that vibe.
I think sometimes the emotion in his films kind of runs dry. Some of his films work, some others don't, but this one kind of does for me.
Hmm. Which is fine. I mean, people are allowed to like Wes Anderson films, just don't expect me to be one. Yeah, so that's all that's for this week. What's up for next week? What to expect when you're expecting? Is it The Lighthouse next week? Just looks like a film that I won't see at the cinema, and I will watch when it comes on Sky in about a year. Yeah, it's one of those ones like, what was that film with about 17,000 stars? He's just not that into you, which I had no interest in watching when it was at the cinema. And then the week, it might have even been the first 2 days it started on Sky, I watched it. So I think this is going to be one of those like that.
I quite liked that, actually, I have to admit.
I
thought that was okay.
He's just not that into you, or what do you expect?
He's just not that into you.
Well, it's
I liked Guinness. Is Guinness a good one?
Yeah. She's got a nice presence. She does. I mean, I'll watch most things with Scarlett Johansson and Jennifer Connelly, and just out of pure obvious reasons. The other one at the Lighthouse is Jeff Who Lives at Home, which I've seen. You haven't got round to that one yet, have you? Or have you?
No.
Yeah, this is the Duplass brothers, who are probably only famous for doing, well, famous, mildly well known, for doing Cyrus, which I really didn't like that much. This one I liked in spite of itself. It's one of these films that relies heavily on coincidence, but it's more in terms of this is what the main character's point of view is. So he's one of these sort of like trippy stoners who thinks that everything means something. So that's why the plot's so contrived, because it sort of like goes into his psyche. So in that respect, it's not actually that bad a plot device, because it does actually have a point in respect to his characterization. The guys in it are just, I mean, they act it fine, but the characters are horrible examples of men. Susan Sarandon's playing both these guys' mother. She's really good. And I have a rather large soft spot for Dame Judy Greer playing Ed Helms' wife. And Dame Judy, indeed, yes.
There's only room for one Dame Judy.
And she is the Greer. And she's Ed Helms' wife, and it's probably the most she's had to do in a very long time. She got at least something to get.
She gets tiny parts and things.
She is typecast as the best friend in the romantic comedy, and to the point that I will watch films where she's in it for three scenes, if she's in it for three scenes. That's the level of my devotion.
I'm not sure I'd
go that far.
Recommend The Descendants to anybody for that.
Just on Judy Greer. No. She's fine. Well, she's better than she is in The Descendants. She's quite memorable in What Women Want. She's quite effective there. She's got more to do than she has in What Women Want. And it's just what they tend to do is both the women characters are so nice that they sort of like reflect nicely on the two male characters and make them seem like less gits than they actually are. So that's a nice little touch. It's one of these films that if you actually think about it, then you can pull it apart, a bit like Dark Shadows. If you give it any intellectual scrutiny, so you're going to say this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is bad. But when you're actually in there watching it, you sort of roll with it. You do have the suspension of disbelief, because the whole coincidence stuff is tied in with the character, so you do kind of roll with it.
So it's contrived, but
Watchable.
It's kind of.
It's the way Crash is contrived. It's the cinema are Red Lights, Rock of Ages, and Cosmopolis. Are we looking?
Red Lights looks interesting.
Surprisingly, it's not a remake of the French 2004 film with Jean-Pierre Darroussin, which wasn't very good. Before anyone asks for the snob reference, not all French films are good. Some suck. That was one of them. Yeah, it does look good. I like the trailer, and I think
a lot. I didn't like Buried, but I've got hope for him.
I think a lot of people who go on the internet movie websites are going to be interested for Elizabeth Olsen, who seems to be she's a very talented young girl, and her being in it is going to get me at least in the cinema to see it. Although I do like the other people, obviously. De Niro never normally tries anymore.
Yeah, De Niro in a rare semi-serious role.
Cal said to me last week that it doesn't take De Niro much to do a film. This is the guy who did Limitless, after all.
Exactly.
You don't have to be a director of notoriety in order to get Robbie De Niro on your ticket anymore.
And he didn't even choose Limitless. He had to be convinced by
Gorgeous Boy.
Matthew. Who's
that? Oh, no, it's Bradley. Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot his name as well. That's
right. I was going to say Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, it's because of the abs.
They're both kind of trashy. But
yeah. Speaking of trashy, Rock of Ages, also out. I'm probably going to be dragged to see this. I hate to say it, but I can see it happening, because I do know people that really want to see this film, and I'm aware that the people that they're friends with don't want to see it. So I'm going to have to.
Who wants to see this film?
Women, apparently, pregnant women, women who are 5.5 months pregnant want to see this film.
Wow.
Well, at least in Birmingham. But I suppose it could be one of these ones. I mean, Tom Cruise, it's one of those sort of Tom Cruise roles, it seems, where he has a lot of fun with it.
So let me get this straight. Next week, there's Cosmopolis.
Yeah.
Red Lights.
And Rock of Ages.
And yet you're going to see Rock of Ages.
With other people, yeah, I'll probably see this on my own. Cosmopolis, though, I doubt I'm seeing, in all honesty.
Really?
Well, Hansen.
I know, but I heard he's quite good in this.
Yeah, well, Cronenberg's been saying that Pattinson's the boy, but then again, Cronenberg also said that Keira was really, really good in A Dangerous Method, and she was embarrassing.
Well, I beg to differ.
Well, I was actually being nice by saying embarrassing. I won't actually say what I really thought. Mind you, I'm hardly a fan of Keira's work.
Yeah, you were already
halfway there.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is Cosmopolis about, do you know?
I think he goes for a haircut, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, he starts off somewhere and he has to travel across the city for a haircut. And
are there any guns?
I doubt he ever gets
there.
Are
there any guns made from body parts that Jude Law is going to shoot him with? Because I'd quite like to see Robin Pattinson being shot.
That could.
That was a reference to Existence, by the way, just in case anyone didn't pick that one up.
It looks like there's lots of sex and violence. So.
Juliette Binoche is in this film, and Paul Giamatti. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This is what.
Does that mean you've got to see it?
No. It's not like Lena Endre in the Master. It's not
in the Master.
A Malreach as well. Oh my goodness. I detest it when directors willfully cast films with people that I have zero interest in watching, and then have the surrounding cast full of people that I like. You will laugh at this, but I actually watched a little bit of Heaven, the Kate Hudson film, because every single person in the supporting cast I really, really like, and it's Nicole Cassell who did The Woodsman. And so I didn't want to. There's the.
And was it as terrible as they say?
No, actually, it wasn't that bad.
Okay.
It's got Gael Garcia, but basically, Hudson's dying. which is
I heard she's quite a slut in it though, isn't she?
Yes, like she's yes, always. No, yes. She's basically dying, and she's non-committal to anybody, and her doctor, luckily for her, happens to be Gael Garcia Bernal, stupidly good-looking Gael Garcia Bernal. So obviously, yeah, because she's Kate Hudson and she's blonde and she's the lead of the film, she gets to go out with him. That this is her follow-up to The Woodsman is just a joke. I think she's done a couple of episodes of The L Word in between, right, and that's all.
Is she a lesbian then? Is she probably?
Well, you'd think, but I mean, you never know. At least she's
it's a bit of a departure from The Huntsman, isn't it?
Oh, it's how well she. I don't have a problem with it because the woman's got to eat. And you didn't make any money by making The Woodsman, clearly. Oh, really? That's it. She also, obviously, she's good friends with Kira Sedgwick, who is in The Woodsman, because I think she did an episode of The Closer as well.
Okay.
But yeah, when you're doing the odd bit of TV work, and then you've got to do a Kate Hudson film, you know where your career's going.
It's a bit sad, isn't it?
Yeah. So, Cosmopolis, yes. Was this at Cannes?
Yes.
Did it get good reviews?
I think the reviews were good. Solid, but not great, I don't think.
Mm. Usual stuff. Right, okay. Should we do Prometheus now?
Yeah, let's talk about Prometheus.
We can talk about some other things we've seen afterwards, but Prometheus. Do you want to do the rundown, or shall I?
I'll do it. Okay.
Yeah.
This is the new film from Ridley Scott. Of Alien, not Aliens, which is probably superior.
Cameron Fowler, but
definitely superior.
If you like explosions, it's a superior.
it's an action film.
It is an action.
Alien's a horror film.
They're different.
And this is sort of a prequel. Well, it is a prequel to Alien.
It's both a prequel and a reboot. It's a pre-boot.
Pre-boot. As in, but you only really find out that it's a prequel in the last 5 minutes on the last shot, really, of the film.
That's the only thing that really confirms it, even though it's
but it's a very similar tone to Alien. It stars Michael Fassbender and Charlize Theron and Idris Elba and Noomi Rapace.
I would say Rapace, but I think it's Rapace.
Okay.
Yeah, it's her husband, actually. I think it's her husband. He was in the Swedish TV series of The Wallanders that they did. He played the stupidly good-looking young policeman who gets bumped off at the end of the first series, much to the girl's chagrin, obviously. Anyway,
she is actually quite pretty. Like,
You wouldn't
have thought it from Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah, Noomi's one of those model-type girls who isn't necessarily someone who you put a picture up and in front of a load of guys and say, is this girl fit? But she's she's striking.
And she's quite good in this, actually.
I think it's the best thing I've seen her in.
Yeah. Because she's the lead.
She is. I actually joked as the credits were coming up to the person I saw it with, why is she first billed? Because you've got Charlize Theron. And I suppose it really should be and Charlize Theron because she's not really in it that much.
No. But and she's saddled with a character that's not...
Nothing. It's nothing.
Very interesting.
It's just nothing there. Hopefully she'll have more to work with in Snow White.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Well, she'll have some shouting to do, at least.
Yes. Yes.
But this, I quite liked this. It's very... I like the tone of it a lot. It's very kind of old-fashioned.
Mm.
The landscape, it's not very CG heavy, despite it being 3D.
Did you get a Tree of Life vibe from the first 10 minutes or so?
Yeah, but probably more pitch black.
Mm.
Kind of sort of barren landscape.
Mm.
It's nice. And the sunshine as well, Danny Boyle's sunshine, it's quite like that.
Yeah, I got vibes of that as well. Darius Volsky shot this. We're going back to... Burton again, he shot Sweeney Todd. I think the cinematography in this was one of the best things about it.
Yeah.
And apparently, because I know someone who worked on Sweeney Todd, lovely bloke, Darius.
Anyway,
I digress.
Wow.
I digress. Yeah, I like this as far as it goes, and the as far as it goes is purely because he's already made the film. He did it 35, however many years ago.
Yeah.
And the first act is virtually identical in terms of structure, in that they've got to, they don't know where they're going, they set down, they go in there, there's a load of pods or eggs or whatever, and then they come back and somebody's infected with something. So it, in that respect, the setup is identical. So I'm just struggling to figure out why he want. I understand why the film was made, because it's a franchise, and it's a franchise that traditionally makes money.
Yeah, well, that's why it was made.
That's why it was made. But why he wanted to remake it, I've no clue at all.
Why would he want to go back there?
Well, yeah, and also, you'd think if you were going to go back there, you'd want to do something different.
Yeah, but and this is the crew dynamic's exactly the same. There's people with agendas, and it all kind of unfolds in exactly the same way.
Yeah, and the third act is very similar as well, in terms of the broad arc of it. So that's the only real caveat. If you hadn't seen Alien and you like horror films, or you like this sort of sci-fi film, then you're going to enjoy it. But
yeah,
most people have seen Alien.
I think you have to object. I think there's some objectionable kind of plot turns.
There's some questionable stuff in there, which is clearly done to provoke and to just try and get the as much of a squeamish factor as possible.
I think that's a bit ridiculous, though. the one scene in particular.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that. I think it was well done in that it gets the desired effect from the audience, but whether you should be going for that is another issue entirely. Yeah. I think the set pieces, when they come, they are well done from a technical standpoint. The only thing is, if you're expecting it because you've already seen Alien and you already know exactly what's coming, in essence, then not that that's always a bad thing, because sometimes you get the writer gives you what you want, and that's what you want.
Yeah.
But you kind of want that at the end. It's like you don't mind if they get together at the end, because you always knew they were going to get together at the end. But when you're getting exactly what you know is going to come all the way through, it's a little bit difficult to get on board with the idea that this is something groundbreaking.
Well, it definitely isn't groundbreaking, but I mean, it's very well done. But
yeah, it's very well made.
Yeah.
Did you see it in 3D?
I did.
Do you think it was worth seeing it in 3D?
£11.30.
Well, I used the card, but it would be, I think we're up to £6.10 now in Brummyland.
I'm not waiting for a replacement card, so.
Ah.
But, yeah, I want to shrivel up and die at that point.
What, when they ask for £11.30, please?
Yeah.
That is outrageous.
The 3D was unnecessary again. It was fine. It wasn't offensive, but it was just unnecessary.
Did it feel as if they needed to actually shoot the thing in 3D? Because apparently it was shot in 3D rather than just being a conversion.
I think there's a lot of background things that are in 3D, right. Sort of kind of things floating around. But I just don't feel as if it was.
Really, actually, that there's that big scene with a load of special effects towards the end. I can imagine that would be more pronounced in 3D.
Yeah, like in terms of the ship and all of the planets floating around, things like that.
Exactly. Darius Volsky, by the way, Dark City, the Pirates of the Caribbean films, and the Mexican. Alice in Wonderland. This is his CV. So
that's not good.
Yeah. Well, The Crow and Dark City's the good, and then the Pirates of the Caribbean films and Eagle Eye are the bad.
Eagle Eye. Wow.
Did you realise that Julianne Moore was the voice of the computer in Eagle Eye?
No.
Yes. I only found that out afterwards. And as soon as I
why?
Why did I find that out, or why did she do it?
Why did she do it?
I assume because they offered her enough money. It's again, I suppose it's poster syndrome, although you're not going to put Julianne Moore's name on the poster for that.
Yes. No. That's one of those films with so many plot holes that's actually quite fun.
Yeah. Although Dark City actually is, that's one of the films that I absolutely hate that Roger Ebert gave it, his named it his best film of the year, because I really, 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 really like it.
Yeah.
And
sometimes he does pick these films out.
Well, the thing with Ebert is that I agree with him in general in terms of the overall quality of a film far more than I would ever want to admit. It's just yeah. his reasoning is utterly ridiculous. Yeah. Whereas
specific,
well, no, it's just because he likes films because they have certain certain arcs. So you know beforehand that he's if you know that he's given, say, Sotsi 5 stars or 4 stars, would they give in America? Then because it's got that sort of this guy was nothing and the child brings everything out of him, etc., etc. There's a very similar arc to the Dardenne film, The Child. So you know before you even click on his review of The Child that he's going to give it 4 stars, because because it's the same sort of storyline. So he, in that respect, he's really, really predictable, because as long as you like tick certain boxes, then he's just going to adore it. And his reviews are just, oh, nobody spectacularly misses the point of a review as much as he does. It's just, some of his reviews are absolutely hilarious. I mean, the review of 2046, there are about half a dozen errors of fact in it. He clearly hadn't watched the film since Cannes, because it got recut. I'm convinced he didn't rewatch it, because there's no way you could make that many errors just describing the plot of the film.
Yeah.
And that's
the bread and butter, isn't it?
Well, you've got to watch the film. I'm sorry, if you're a professional critic. I'm not a professional critic. I can turn a film off. You're getting paid to review it. You can't. Right. So, general consensus on Prometheus is quite good, but lumbering under the weight of previous Ridley Scott films.
Yeah. Well.
Or which a previous? Specific. A specific. The specific one, Alien.
Yeah. I gave it a B minus. Mm. But.
Which is about 7 out of 10, which is what I gave it.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'd watch it again, not in a hurry.
If it was on TV and you didn't have anything better to do.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to watch in a box set with Alien and Aliens, like in a few years' time, I think.
I love how you didn't mention The Fincher.
That one's okay, actually. But I did forget about that.
Yeah, most people do.
Isn't there an Alien Resurrection?
Yeah, Winona Ryder. That's Genet. Actually, randomly.
Oh, wow.
I know, that's crazy. That really is crazy. Right, we are pressing on now.
Yep. Do you want to just run through some things you've watched recently?
Yeah, there's a few others. We've done Dark Shadows. I saw salmon fishing in like Yemen when that was out. I know, I can't believe I even saw it. Ewan McGregor, Emily Blunt. It's a Lasse Hallström film, which is just... it's almost like a swear word when you when you're talking to people who follow the Oscars. it wasn't. I quite liked it, actually. It wasn't bad. Does what it says on the tin. It's a nice little film. Blunt's growing on me a bit. I've always liked Ewan, and it's really, really well put together. It's sort of same sort of level as Chocolat. Probably not as good as Chocolat, which again, some people don't like it. So that might not be saying much for some people.
I didn't like Chocolat.
It's not something that in retrospect I would recommend people go and see in the cinema, but if it's on TV, yeah, sure,
right,
sure, go for it. Also saw The Adopted, which is Melanie Laurent's directorial debut. She really, really likes Mike Mills, who directed her in Beginners.
So do I.
It's very quirky, lots of emphasis on the soundtrack, actor
lots
heavy
of actor odd conversations.
It's more just general quirkiness between the characters. That sort of tone. It's Mike Mills sort of tone rather than anything else. Probably a bit too. It's probably just not. It's just not the strongest written film on the page, which she'll probably, if she writes more, she'll sort out a bit better. But a decent enough, promising enough debut. So I think we're probably going to end on The Avengers.
Yes. Which neither of us liked, right?
Not particularly. No. I can't claim to have enjoyed it.
And it's sad because I do like Joss Whedon, but I don't know. It just doesn't. There's not a lot plot-wise.
I think there's an inherent.
It's a
problem.
Bit lazy.
I think there's an inherent problem in what they're trying to do. Because if you're trying to, it's basically an excuse for Marvel to clump all these like films that they've been doing over the last 5 or 6 years all together into one supergroup of films, yeah. Characters in one film, and then if you haven't, they've got to introduce all the characters. So what that means is they spend about 45 minutes.
They spend so much time.
They spend about 45 minutes to an hour doing this, and so if you've already seen the films, you're just waiting for it, for the plot to start, and if you haven't seen the films. Then you're just waiting for them to get on with it, and it's a skate job, and you're never going to have all the nuances that if you'd actually watched the films. And so that's the first third, and then the last third, and this is probably the biggest insult I could give it. It reminded me of Transformers 2.
Yeah.
In it's just this massive, prolonged vanity fest of a battle sequence right at the end. And
I agree,
you're thinking this only exists to satisfy the vanity of the director. And
so many people in the film don't seem to have an excuse to be there.
No. And
it's like the villain, Loki, doesn't really have a reason to be to have a bee in his bonnet about anything, and it's just it's all a bit vague with there's a cube, magic cube or something.
Yeah.
That transports people.
Whatever. Yeah, I know. Because there's no focus on any one character and they're trying to spread it all over, it means that nobody really actually, I think, commits to the performance apart from Mark Ruffalo. And the only reason he does is because he hasn't done it before.
Yeah.
So I think he thinks, oh, okay, I've got to come to the party here because I don't want to let it down.
He's the only one that brings a sort of freshness to the film.
Yeah, RDJ's.
Because it's...
RDJ, I thought, was really phoning this one in. I think he's just doing his thing, doing his normal thing, didn't do anything out of the ordinary. Hemsworth, I'm not...
I quite like Hemsworth, generally. He's okay.
I'll reserve judgment until after Snow White. Let's just put it that
that's
way.
That's the kicker.
Yeah, that's probably a bit unfair on him, but that's how I roll. And who else was there? Oh, yeah, I like Chris Evans, actually. I do quite
actually,
like
yeah, Chris Evans... He's got something about him.
He's got
feels
charm.
Like he's from the 30s.
Yeah, he's got charm, but not not so much that from the sort of normal average guy's point of view that you're annoyed by it. Because sometimes when you've got a good looking, charming guy, you can just think, oh well, yeah, get lost, mate. But he's the sort of guy who you'd more want to go out for a drink with, rather than just like curse the fact that he's stealing your woman.
Yeah, this actually made me want to watch Captain America, which...
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
Mm.
I probably still won't, but it kind of made me want to for a bit.
Well, Thor is on Sky at the moment, and I almost watched a bit of that the other day. But I think I'll have to wait until I just come across when it's on at the beginning, and then I will watch it.
Yeah.
But I'd seen the Incredible Hulks, and I'd seen the Iron Mans. I hadn't seen Captain America or Thor. But I didn't need to, I don't think. Given how much exposition they went into and how much money they made. How much money did they make again?
$1.3 billion.
$1.3 billion. Are there that many geeks in America?
And also, does this mean they're just gonna lump loads of big stars and pay them millions of pounds?
This is the thing they think
and expect that everybody's going to go and see the film.
It's like The Dark Knight Rises, in that they obviously thought, okay, the second one, The Dark Knight, did so well, we can't actually not have the words The Dark Knight in the third one, otherwise people won't go and see it. No one had... you not having Batman in the title didn't have anything to do with that film's popularity. Absolutely nothing. So you don't need to have The Dark Knight in this one.
Exactly.
And I think it's like this one. The very fact that they're like four protagonists from four previous films that he'd done. The films didn't do that well, apart from Iron Man. They didn't really do that well. So nobody's going to see that. Nobody was going to see that film thinking, oh, you know what? I really want to see Mark Ruffalo playing the Incredible Hulk. Because nobody wants to see anybody playing the Incredible Hulk, because all the films have bombed and they're trying to reboot it for the third time in under a decade. But so I agree. This is the thing with this, is if they're now going to think, okay, this is the way forward, we group a load of them together and that's what's going to make the money. That's not why the film made money.
I mean, it seems as if they were just building it up as an event movie, and that's why people have gone to see it.
Yeah, and what else was out?
Dark Shadows.
Exactly. Nothing else was out at the time. There was actually a whole month, this is unheard of for me, a whole 4 weeks where I didn't go to the cinema. And I think The Avengers was the first film I saw after that month. And it's because there was just this black hole post-Oscars, you have a few foreign language things that seep through in sort of March, early April.
Yeah.
But then that it just died and there was just nothing. It was just...
But is that because of The Avengers? The people just shied away from it?
Maybe. They were just thinking weird. But then again, sometimes you think, well, sometimes it is a dumping ground where you think, okay, this is something that wasn't actually good enough for us to push for an Oscar, so we'll hold off for a little bit and then just dump it afterwards and then just hope that 7 people see it. And then we can use it as an excuse to actually release the DVD a little bit earlier.
Yeah. Mm. I'm sure the DVD's coming out at Christmas. I'm sure that's organised.
Yes. Yeah, and it'll probably be the Sky movie for Easter next year.
Yeah.
So predictable.
Right. Are we done?
I think, well, I've got everything crossed off on my list, apart from Casa de mi Padre, which apparently is coming out soon.
Is it?
Yes.
I'm surprised it's coming out here, but...
I'm surprised it got a release as well, considering Everything Must Go didn't get a release.
Yeah.
Which I actually thought was quite good, and it's on Sky at the moment, and do check it out, because if nothing else, it's got Rebecca Hall in it.
Wow. Always a plus.
Indeed. And she's in the new Stephen Frears film, which is coming out quite soon.
Yeah. Was it Lair the Favourite?
Yeah, I haven't seen the trailer for it, but people seem to like her in the trailer. But then again, people seem to like Anne Hathaway in the trailer of Les Mis. Yeah. And with that, we come full circle.
Wow.
That was almost
cyclical.
Almost as if we planned that.
It's just stuff now. It's like a perfect circle.
Yeah, and so Cal is going to spend the rest of tomorrow trying to sync up either side of this conversation. So
yes, all the various hitches that have happened.
Phone calls being made, outings of the time we've got to finish this.
This is going to be a nightmare. I may need assistance tomorrow, just so you know.
Okay, cool.
And we're coming up to an hour and 25, by the way,
this is not going to be a normal duration, I wouldn't have thought. It's just because we've had like about a month and a half's worth of stuff to talk about. So
that's true.
And we so had no genuine structure.
I'm going to think of some, I'm going to get some decent music.
Yes. So that's nothing written by me.
I'll try and get some appropriate music. Be determined.
I was just thinking appropriate music. We could have some sort of like really foreboding classical music.
Yeah.
Shep's about to destroy something.
Moonrise Kingdom style.
Oh, God. Terrence Malick style. We could have some angelic choirs in the background while you're talking about the way of nature and I'm talking about the way of snobbery.
And let's just stop there.
Before we annoy too many people.
I can't give you all my dreams, all the life I live. You and I know what friendship means. That's all we got to give. Who will take your dreams away? Takes your soul another day. gravestone an image.